not a matter of if you'll need traffic and weather for your drive-in. It's when. Get it every 10 minutes on the 10s with Wills and Snyder on WTAM 1100. Cleveland's News Radio.
The deal boss, Matt Greenidge, Channel 3's Morning News. Will's Ways to Save is with me. Okay, look, it seems like it's all about charging. There was a point over the holidays, Serena, Nate, we were all together. I think we were in line for a charger because everybody's got some. Hey, I'm down to one bar, you know?
It is. Tis the postseason of charging. And one of the big things, being at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas this is the year of wireless charging. People have given up on adapters and plugs and cords. And they are charging wirelessly.
Wirelessly is the way to go. I mean, we're doing so many things wirelessly, and now is, you know, oh, if Einstein could see us now, right?
I love that. Yes. And well before Einstein's birthday on March 14th, I believe, you can actually enjoy the power of next-generation charging tied to the Consumer Electronics Show. A top-of-the-line fast wireless charger that works for both Apple and Android devices is your touch-and-play solution. See, I didn't say plug-and-play. Touch and play.
I like that.
Well, you get very sleek stand, sits on a nightstand by the bath, by the kitchen, props your phone up. But when your phone is docked, Bill, you are charging wirelessly, nothing to plug into your phone. It is a fast wireless charging. Then on top of that, it has a cooling fan. So in the event your phone gets a little bit heated, this is making sure your phone's not hot, but your charging is fast, wireless, and ready to go.
Excellent. Now, how much am I paying for this thing?
$25.99, down from
$50. Wow.
Top rated. You can watch my full charge test and just how happy I was not to have to plug something else into the wall on WTAM.com using the keyword save.
Great price. Hey, look, this is the big time for the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas. Matt is there. Watch him post things on Twitter, at Matt Granite, YouTube. He's doing so many things, a lot of great tech. And we look forward to our updates from him out there in Vegas. WTAM.com. Keyword save, couple of clicks, you'll have the deal, and you'll be wirelessly doing your charge. Thanks, Matt.
Awesome.
Hey, coming up in 10, fan of Game of Thrones, got some news for you. In 5, our Secretary of State Mike Pompeo doing a little damage control mission to the Middle East on this issue about pulling troops out of Syria. Bill Zimper will take us through it on News Radio, WTAM 1100. However you're listening this morning, thank you. Have an Alexa. Ask her to wake you up with WTAM 1100 on iHeartRadio. Easy way to set your alarm. Start your morning with Cleveland's Morning News with Wills and Snyder, where you get Mike's sports mornings at 15 and 45 past. And your take on Cavs and Kitchens and all here. Morning, Mike.
Good morning, Bill. Well, Freddie Kitchens is doing a heck of a job as the season wound down to the point where even a couple of weeks to go in the season, he sounded, like he was maybe, angling to be the head coach at some point.
Is it always been your goal to be a head coach?
Definitely, no doubt.
Freddie's dream's going to come true today. The Browns will officially name him the team's new head coach after the amazing job that he did with Baker Mayfield and the Browns offense in the final 8 games of the season with 2 games to play. Kitchens started to get questions about his future and philosophy, and he had the right answers.
Cleveland and I get along well, you know. I think I didn't have a dad as a coach, okay. I didn't have a starting point in this league. I grew up the son of a tire maker at Goodyear Tire and Rubber Plant in Gadsden, Alabama. So I didn't have any, you know. Benjamin May said, those who start behind in the game of life must run faster to catch up. And I feel like I've been running fast my whole life.
And he's reached his goal. He's a head coach in the National Football League. Still no official word from the Browns, but that's going to come at some point today with a press conference to follow. Now, Greg Williams, what a job he did on an interim basis. He heads a long list of assistants who are exiting the team as Freddie's going to put a new staff together. And that question, I guess, becomes, and here we go, who will be in Kitchens' cabinet? Oh, boy, I had to use that one this morning. But defensive coordinator, offensive coordinator, who will call the plays? How is that going to be structured? Those are questions that will need to be answered. And among the assistants who are leaving, quarterbacks coach Ken Zampezi, special teams coach Amos Jones, offensive line coach Bob Wiley, and Josh Cribbs, our good friend who's been a special assistant, special teams assistant, also will be let go. Hopefully, maybe at some point, Freddie will reconsider that, because Josh is so passionate and I think just did a great job in working with the young guys on this team. Now, Greg Williams, very gracious in a statement last last night to Browns fans. It'll be interesting to see where he ends up. Now, around the NFL, Adam Gase, who was let go by Miami, he gets the Nets job. And John Elway, trying to put things together in Denver, has named Bears defensive coordinator Vic Fangio as the team's new head coach, with Gary Kubiak coming out of retirement to be the Broncos offensive coordinator. Cavaliers had a 13-point lead after the first quarter in New Orleans, but that lead was down to 4 at the half, and by the end of the night, they got blown out.
Lobs one to the bucket. It's grabbed by Davis. He lays it up and in. His big night continues. 33 points, I beg your pardon, 11 rebounds. His Pelicans 120, Cavaliers 106.
Anthony Davis with 38 points. Their all-star just doing in the Cavs as they win it 140 to 124. Cavs gave up 81 points in the second half. Cavs top scorer was Jordan Clarkson. The losing streak is now 11. They have today off. It won't get any easier. They're in Houston to meet James Harden and the Rockets tomorrow night. Home of the Indians and the Cavs, Mike Snyder, News Radio WTAM 1100.
Internationally this morning, the Zimfer file, our Secretary of State head to the Middle East, or at least trying to calm some fear there about what we currently are wanting when it comes to a Middle East security situation. Bill, what's the story?
I'll tell you what, Mike Pompeo is like one of those plate spinners on the Ed Sullivan Show, trying to keep everything going. And didn't help that John Bolton knocked a couple of those plates down already when he was in the Middle East here. This is such a complex situation, Bill. Unbelievable job for Mike Pompeo to complete here. He is going to visit 9 countries. He's already been to 3, and he will continue on till early next week. So the question is, what is he going to do? He wants to reassure our allies in the region that we are not abandoning the fight against ISIS. Even though, yes, the United States will eventually pull our troops out of Syria, we are not abandoning that fight. The situation wasn't helped by John Bolton, who went into Israel this weekend and said that as a precondition of the U.S. withdrawal, the Kurds in northern Syria would have to be protected. Well, that drew outrage from Turkey's President Erdogan, who considers those Kurdish fighters terrorists, and he then called off a meeting with Bolton. So we have a lot going on in the Middle East right now, not only with Syria, but when you add Iran into the mix and the civil war in Yemen into the mix, counter-terrorism operations, and the relationship with Saudi Arabia. Like I said, Mike Pompeo's trying to keep those plates spinning. Today he is in Egypt. He will continue on to Bahrain and Qatar, UAE, Oman, Kuwait, and Saudi Arabia before this trip is over. And adding to the problem, Bill, the fact that 5 of those countries, and if you add Turkey to the mix, that adds 6 of those countries, currently have no ambassador in place. So Pompeo is the guy right now.
All right, Bill Zimfer on it this morning. Bill, thanks much.
You're welcome, Bill.
Latest dust up in the Middle East really started with President Trump and that tweet from about a month ago saying, hey, we defeated ISIS and going to pull out when it comes to troops, now saying he's going to do it slowly. All right, 524 News Radio, WTAM 1100. Fan of Game of Thrones? Got some news for you.
I have the absolute right to do national emergency if I want. My threshold will be if I can't make a deal with people that are unreasonable.
Many federal workers will not be receiving their paychecks. The president seems to be insensitive to that. He thinks maybe they could just ask their father for more money, but they can't.
I know there's be millions of Americans, hundreds of thousands of federal workers, that are as disappointed as we are that the Democrats are unwilling to engage in good faith negotiations.
Vice President Pence, Speaker of the House Pelosi, and of course President Trump. Michael Bauer joins me. Is it just me, or every time this crew gets together, the meetings seem shorter?
Oof, half an hour. They had half an hour yesterday. So when you see the President, Bill, talking about a waste of time, at least it was only 30 minutes yesterday. That's how long the negotiation between President Trump and congressional Democrats lasted before it was completely collapsed and shut down. And then we're talking about language here, too, Bill, which I think is going to be important. It's been important, where a president tweeted out saying that he asked Nancy Pelosi if he quickly opened things up in regard to government, are you going to approve a border security, which includes a wall or steel barrier? Nancy said no, so he said bye-bye, nothing. nothing else works. But Nancy Pelosi's spokesperson tweeting out that the president never used the term border security and that he went to his old language of asking for a wall. And I think, for as silly as that sounds, I think when you're talking about Washington, D.C., you're talking about federal government and taxes and lawsuits and everything that has the specifics in language are very important. And the more he refers to a wall or a border or a barrier on some level, the less the Democrats are likely to open anything up. If this was under an umbrella of border security, you might get a better chance at Democrats opening purse strings.
Yeah, language is everything. Speaking of purse strings, I will note some House Republicans joining Democrats passing a bill yesterday to reopen the government, 240 to 188. That goes over to the Senate, probably not going to go anywhere, but at least they want to get on record that, hey, we'll vote to reopen things.
Yeah, and that's the indication, and you're seeing some response from people in the Senate, although Mitch McConnell not allowing for any votes on anything along those lines, but you are seeing some Republicans in the Senate that are saying the same thing. Listen, we can deal with border security, and we can deal with a wall, because they don't see it as an emergency at this point, so they certainly would be willing to deal with it later, but let's get the government reopened. That's the real emergency at this point, and right now it's not clear, Bill, if or when there will be any more negotiations, but on Saturday, a shutdown is going to be the longest in U.S. history. And economists are warning right now that there's a catastrophe in the making if this thing goes on for weeks or months.
Our Michael Bauer this morning. Michael, thanks much.
You got it, Bill. Have a great morning.
You too. Some things not happening. Besides people that are on furlough, if you've got business with the government, think about buying a home, the process for a mortgage. Partial government shutdown made getting a mortgage a little bit harder. If you're looking to get a single-family FHA loan, note they're still being funded, but FHA Title I loans, FHA home equity conversion mortgages are not being processed. Veterans Affairs loans continue. You may experience, though, a bit of a hold up. USDA not approving any loans currently now as well. And the politics and the language of all this, interesting on who's in the White House and what the other party thinks, of course. Rush Limbaugh yesterday got a call from Vice President Pence, talked about it some.
I was talking to Vice President about all of the video and audio sound bites of Pelosi and Hillary and Schumer and Obama advocating for a wall, promising to spend money for a wall as far back as 2005, 2009. Here's a little montage. I mean, the sound bites are much longer than this, but we've put together just in 21 seconds. I want you to hear this. Chuck Schumer from 2009, Hillary Clinton 2015, Barack Obama from 2005.
Illegal immigration is wrong, plain and simple.
I voted numerous times when I was a senator to spend money to build a barrier to try to prevent illegal immigrants from coming in.
We simply cannot allow people to pour into the United States undetected, undocumented, unchecked.
Okay, so what's new? What's different? What's changed? By the way, the money that was on the table to build a barrier, a wall, a fence, whatever, back when these three were discussing this, at one time got up as high as, I think, $56 billion. Now, Trump is talking about $5.1 billion. And you want to talk about who's playing politics here? It's these people. This is simply not going to happen because Donald Trump would benefit from it. Remember, this is about denying Trump re-election 2020. It's about getting Trump out of office before 2020. It is pure politics. Pure 100% politics. These people are the biggest blatant. You will not find greater examples of hypocrisy than this.
President Trump heads to the border today. So does Geraldo. Geraldo in Cleveland from the border with the president today after 9 on News Radio WTAM 1100. More Rush's take as this plays out follows the news at noon. News Radio WTAM 1100. This is Bill Wills. Let's talk travel and planning a trip. Our go-to guy every week is Rick Cini, founder, CEO at FairCompare.com. Blaine, Happy New Year, my friend.
Hey, Happy New Year as well. It's going to be a good one. I can feel it.
We like the sounds of that. You posted an interesting piece in USA Today in the last week, just looking ahead as far as flying. And you know, depending on your plans, you may not be able to adjust. But indeed, there are some times of the year where overall there is cheaper airfare, right?
Yeah, there are some seasonal times. Domestic is not as pronounced as international. You have some very distinct seasonal price point changes for international flying. So, and as you might imagine, it sort of corresponds to the weather and many times to kids going back to school or actually, actually getting out of school, depending on what time of year you're looking at. So, but just generally, this is the perfect time to fly of the entire year. For the next 2.5 months or so. There's a few exceptions. You've got President's Day weekend in mid-February, which is usually corresponds with Valentine's Day weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So that one's a little more expensive. And then, of course, once you hit about early to mid-March, you see some of the spring break rates kick up pretty dramatically. And that's essentially if you want to leave on a Saturday or Sunday and come back on a Saturday or Sunday, bracketing spring break weekend. And you can be rest assured the airlines know every school district and every spring break time period in the entire country.
Look, overseas travel, you may not be able to plan a trip and leave the next 2 weeks, but this is good information. If you're planning ahead, thinking about your maybe even 2020, you're telling me overall, normally, that first quarter, you'll find a lower fare?
No, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
And you're going to see pricing into Europe for the next several weeks, 7-8 weeks, and you still can buy tickets. And you're going to see pricing down in the $600 or $700 round trip range. Let me put that in perspective.
Okay.
Average fuel surcharge is just under $400, and the average taxes and fees, which aren't controlled by the airlines, $150. So if you see a $650 or $700 wintertime ticket, that means the airfare is $50 to $60 each way.
You mentioned spring break. Let me get you out here on this. You know, before long, we like to stay positive here. It'll be pitchers and catchers. People looking at Arizona, maybe spring training. Should I be locking that thing in?
Yeah, you can go ahead and start looking. In the next few weeks, it's a perfect time to lock in. The sweet spot is between 3 months and 1 month. The closer to 3 months, the better.
Okay.
If you're inside of 1 month, you're playing right into the airline's hands. That's when prices start to go up every week.
Rick Cini, faircompare.com. Great site to use, too. Rick Cini. Rick, thanks, pal.
Hey, thanks, Bill.
And Mike Joe Roman, of course, heads up the Greater Cleveland Partnership in studio for his monthly visit. Good to see you, first of all. Good morning.
Good to see you. Happy New Year, all.
And you know what? Let's keep the sports talk going here just a bit, Joe. It's a great reminder. I was thinking this weekend, downtown, we got Tribe Fest at the convention center. Mm-hmm. Everybody excited about the upcoming year. I mean, the talk, obviously, with the Browns and the Kitchens here and the coach. The team is one thing at the queue, all right? I love what the queue is going to look like when that whole thing's done. Seriously.
It's going to be gorgeous. It's going to look like a brand new arena at one-tenth the cost of what a brand new arena is costing other cities. So I think it's a great deal for everybody.
Fantastic.
It's amazed me every day, Joe, when I go in there and, Bill, you know, going in and out of there, how they've been able to do all this work, yet keep the building open for not only the Cavs games, the Monsters.
It's a construction site.
It's amazing how they and they keep on making progress. They had the one entrance, it was kind of open. There's a lot of cool air, and now that's been sealed off though. And it's beautiful what they've been able to do. Just amazing what they've been able to do and keep progressing on that while making, as Bill said, a construction site.
Yeah, the engineers on that project have done a remarkable job. Remarkable job.
Hey, while we're talking to construction, just a minute with Joe Roman, we got several things I want to talk to you about. Magnet, which is a group that promotes manufacturing in Northeast Ohio, GCP's working on several projects. I would just note the jobs numbers. One of the headlines has been manufacturing jobs in this country, right?
Absolutely. A lot of factors there.
Yeah.
But I think what you have to go back to is, you know, those folks who, and there were many, this isn't to pick on anybody, but, you know, the adage that manufacturing was dead 20 years ago just didn't apply. It was changing. It was changing to higher value add. It was changing to fewer employees, but employees who had more talents who were doing, had a greater productivity ratio. So, and what we're seeing now with various things, you know, tariffs and tax change and everything is that we're starting to benefit from that. And Cleveland has remained, unlike a lot of cities, Cleveland has remained a core manufacturing center.
I had a buddy of mine that's in manufacturing. He said, you know, we had to retool in a couple of ways. Physically retooling some plants, depending on what you're making, and then just the talent level.
Absolutely.
I mean, it is amazing. And you know this, the technology.
The talent's the biggest thing. The only thing I would do is, you know, I would urge parents who have young children, you know, in high school or a little bit, you know, college is great. And a lot of the jobs of the future will require a college degree.
Sure.
But there are some great, great jobs in the manufacturing field that are highly skilled, that have next steps, even when you leave the manufacturing world, that parents need to encourage their kids to look at.
I've not been there lately, but I was at Lincoln Electric about a year or so ago for the tour. I mean, sure, if your kid thinks they might even want to pick up a welding torch,
right?
Call them, go out to take a tour and see what they do.
Heck,
out there.
Lincoln Electric even has a gift shop now where you can buy T-shirts that symbolize welding. It's tremendous.
Joe Roman, Greater Cleveland Partnership. Bill Wills. Joe Roman heads up the Greater Cleveland Partnership in studio. Gets to visit. We get to visit with him every few weeks about some things. And if you're a member of the Greater Cleveland Partnership, good mornings, and you're not alone.
No,
congratulations.
No, no, no.
You got some great numbers now.
Yeah, we had our best membership year ever in 2018. A lot of it was with the small business community. We put out a new product 2 years ago for healthcare, which is very, very attractive to small businesses, especially if you have 50 or fewer employees. But the key there really is, while it's great to add members and it gives us more revenues to invest in our economy, what's really good is you talk to small businesses nationally or locally, and the absolute biggest problem they face is making health care available to their employees. And they're in a competitive world. You and I both want jobs where there's health care. So do employees in small businesses. But it's harder for a small business to make that available, and this product enables them to do that.
Especially with the economy now, with the job market and the competition for good people, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you want to hold on to great people, and health care is a part of that. And this product, obviously, with 3,000 new members in 1 year, it's a product that small businesses should take a look at.
You're not involved in the GCP, you should be. All right, a couple other notes here. Diversity and inclusion assessment.
Yes, we are doing some, you know, this was part of our strategic plan.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're trying to do, Bill, is, you know, the good news in the last 10 or 15 years, I would say 15, and we've been a part of this, but so have others, that the community has begun to realize that not only is diversity and inclusion and paying attention to those issues important, it's really part of driving an economy. But we have tended to sort of make it a last thought.
Yes.
It's got to be a first thought.
I got you.
And that's what we're trying to do, that in our organization, we hope others will do it, that inclusion really is an opportunity at the top of the list to drive everything else you're doing, as opposed to, okay, now we've got this project going, let's think about how to make it inclusive. It's really a change in mindset.
And just new faces and new energy at times. I know you've got several events throughout. You've got a thing on internship coming up.
Yes.
It's a great opportunity just to refresh and remind people about opportunities.
Internships are one of the most important tools driving an economy's talent pool. All of us had internships, or most of us did. We know how valuable that was.
Yeah.
But what this internship summit is about is, you know, there's some unbelievable internship programs here. Swagelok, Sherwin-Williams, the Cleveland Clinic, many, many others. But in the middle market area, where companies may not have, you know, a gigantic HR office or lawyers to figure this out for them, they need help in figuring out the pathway and the roadmap to adding internships to their company. And that's largely what the Internship Summit is all about.
Okay. I got more information at the Greater Cleveland Partnership website. Got about another minute here. Opportunity Zones, we've talked about this a lot. You got a new special assistant that's just working on that, right?
Yeah, it's growing and growing and growing. We have... there's a lot of interest. There's a lot of opportunities. Our major mission here, again, tying to our strategic plan, is we know there's going to be investments through the Opportunity Zone mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
We want to drive them into the neighborhoods that need the investment the most. And that's the role we want to play.
Mike DeWine will be sworn in as governor on Monday, longtime name in this state, Columbus leadership. One of his first jobs, I guess, put together a budget, right?
Yeah, most important thing. He's got a budget that he needs to pass and sign by June 30th, which will govern the state for the next two calendar years. And obviously, he has a very short window of time. You know, he's very skilled, though. He's been around this state his entire career. This has been the job he's always wanted.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he's ready.
He's talked about kids a lot, family, education.
His priority seems to be, you know, and the good news there is that he was dealing with children's issues as Attorney General. In fact, the individual that worked with him closest on that will be moving over to the governor's office to help him.
Joe Roman, Greater Cleveland Partnership. We're off to a great start for the year. Good to see you, pal. Thanks
Good to
much.
See you. Happy New Year,
you
everybody.
You too, buddy. Cleveland's Morning News with Wells and Snyder. Scott Scooter East, producer extraordinaire. You're basically a professional gambler. Not quite professional, but you're the one that's, you know.
He gambles every day.
He doesn't have any money because he's always buying lottery tickets.
He wins a lot, though.
That's what he says.
I win.
There's a we're in this body. There's a story out of California today. Guy attempted to steal a roommate's lotto ticket for $10 million. Guy is under arrest after being accused of stealing his roommate's $10 million winning lottery ticket. A guy claims he bought a $30 scratcher, bunch of scratchers, I guess, is the way they do it. $30 in California.
Big time, big time one.
Scraped it off. He thought he won $10,000.
Right.
So he tells his roommates, "Hey, I won $10,000 on this scratcher." Next day, he takes that ticket to the lottery office. Was told it had been altered. He suspected one of his roommates had stolen the actual winning ticket. Filed a police report. The next day, one of his roommates shows up with a winning lottery ticket for $10
million. $10
million? $10 million, yeah, because that's what he thought. He thought he won $10,000.
Right. Actually,
the roommate looked at the ticket, evidently, and thought, no, that's a $10
million. That's $10 million.
Screw this friendship. Yeah. He took the ticket, and he turned it in. And I guess I wonder how when you buy a lot, how do they know who bought the ticket?
Because they know where the store, because it's registered at the store that you bought it at.
But anybody walks in.
Yeah, but they had him on video camera.
That's how.
Yes.
But is that the case all the time?
It just depends how long the
video... Seriously, if we send you with $10 to go buy lottery tickets.
Sure, a lot of stores have cameras.
But is that the way it has to be, legally?
If you gave me 10, all three of us are.
And they would know exactly what
who bought it. Yes, they would know
because the time's on the ticket.
Even a scratch off.
Yes, because they're registered. Those tickets are registered when they register the books for the lottery places. Because some places scan your actual ticket, but some they scan.
But how do they know it's you that bought it?
Because you're probably on camera.
Probably. That's what I'm saying. Probably.
You're on camera. Most of the time you are. Sure, they can go back in
the
archive.
But what if the camera ain't working?
Well, then.
That's what
go.
I'm getting at.
But see, most places you're on archive. Like, say I went down to a Speedway and you're inside the store and they could, dictate the time that I actually bought them when they go back on the video and they rewind
what if the
tape.
Video's not working?
Well, then,
that's what I keep coming back to.
Well, then this guy lucked out because they caught
that's
him.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, they caught him on this one.
That's what I'm saying.
So that, but most places do have you on video. Sure, they do.
But it's not a lit.
Even if
that,
you get it out of the machine?
Sure, because they'll know the machine. Yeah, there's video cameras that shine at
them. But I'm just saying, if that's the only proof, but that's not a legality, right? It's not. In other words, it's not a prerequisite when you buy a ticket that they know exactly who bought it. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Because you can buy the ticket and give it as a gift.
Right, exactly.
Sure you could. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can't. Okay. You can't say. Oh,
but in this case, the guy was lucky because there was video
for your birthday. If I was to buy you a lottery ticket,
that's a big if.
Okay, now and you got $10 million on it. I just can't turn around and say, "Well, I bought that for you.
Oh, you
I want to join in."
All right, just, let's keep this tape right here.
That doesn't work.
Scooter's the kind of guy. Yeah. Say he'd give you five losing tickets. Say, I bought these for you, we didn't win.
Right,
but I wanted this other one over here that I had.
But that's because there was video. That's what saved.
Yeah, that's a good guy because he bought it. He bought it.
825. Here's John Michael, Jim Jones, their take, as they called it last night, second half, boy, they were just outscored big time, but didn't start that way early, though, guys.
Well, you're right, Bill. The Cavs jumped on the Pelicans early. They took a 38-25 lead after one quarter and led by as many as 16 points, but the Pelicans, Jim, seemed to find their footing about midway through that second quarter as they were able to close the gap to four after two quarters of play.
John, momentum is such a fragile thing, not necessarily because we've been struggling, but any time during an NBA game. A few tough calls, a couple of mistakes, a couple of forced turnovers, and they lost it, and they couldn't regain it in the second half.
In that second half, the Pelicans, one of the top scoring teams in the league, put up 41 in the third quarter, 40 in the third, as they went on to a 140-124 win. You mentioned it last night during the game. There are not a lot of teams, not a lot of players who can slow down Anthony Davis, and Davis was at his best last night, 38 points, 13 rebounds, 7 assists. The guy can do it all.
Yes, he can, John. He's been, for the last 5 years, he's been one of the top three players in our league. You know, this NBA game, based on the fundamentals, a lot of it is matchups. The physical matchup and then the skill matchup, secondly. This kid has both of them. No one can match up with him. It's just a matter of him going out and doing what he has to do and getting players around him. Now, Mirotic played a little bit last night, and he's going to help them, John, because he'll space the floor. He's got a level of toughness and arrogance where he can make shots, and that's what they need. They need a fourth player that can score. If you're living and dying with Randall being your third scorer, you're really going to have some problems.
So last night was game one of the six-game road trip. The Cavaliers fall 140-124. Tomorrow, the Cavs are in Houston looking to sweep the season series with the Rockets before heading on to L.A., and then off they go to Portland, Utah, and Denver to complete the sixth city in 11-day trip. Guys?
All right, thanks, guys. Anthony Davis, what a night for him last night. 38 points, 13 rebounds, 7 assists, 4 blocks. What a player. We got a little highlight package of him put together for you at willsandsnyder.com. Best team coverage of the Browns. Bill Wills, Mike Snyder alongside Fred Greetham follows it and almost called this thing the other day when it comes to, hey, why not, Freddie? Morning, pal.
Hey, yeah. Had my crystal ball out.
Well done, Fred.
Yeah.
You did a great piece on Freddie. I've been urging people to read it throughout the morning, Fred. As you wrote this last week, and as it unfolded last night, yesterday afternoon, really, that it broke. Your thoughts as you look at the whole thing, Fred, as how it came down to Freddie Kitchens.
I think when John Dorsey said at midseason when they appointed those guys, they said, these last games really matter, and let's see where it goes. And I don't know if they even thought that would happen or turn out that way. But I think it came down to, you know, you had to keep continuity. And the biggest improvement was on the offense. And I think Greg Williams did a great job. He was actually probably a better head coach than defensive coach. I mean, you look at their stats, they were 30th in the NFL. And I just think it was too big of a risk in the end to, you know, like clean house and get rid of everybody. You know, Baker Mayfield and Freddie Kitchens, obviously, they turned the offense around in those final eight games, and I just think you don't want to mess with that.
And I think as this thing played out, I think that the other thing for the Browns, other teams had inquired about Freddie because they saw what he did, and they were at a point now, we want to keep him around somehow, and I don't know if there was really a way you could have done that, just keeping him in that same role. Was there, Fred?
No, I mean, as far as, and here's my logic too, is that, you know, they interviewed seven coaches. Only two of them have been head coaches before. One was Greg Williams. That might have been more of a courtesy. And so you're going to hire a first-time guy anyway. Why not just go down the hallway and tap the one you have in-house? And even if he would have stayed as offensive coordinator, if the Browns' offense is still productive next year, he's going to leave to be a head coach, and then you're starting over again. So I think, you know, if you're looking for the up-and-coming guy, why not try the 44-year-old, you know, Freddie Kitchens, who's been around 13, 14 years, and I think he'll do a fine job.
As we talked this morning, there's no guarantee as to how this, you know, he's going to be as a coach. But I want to set up a question this way, guys, in that I remember Jimmy Haslam said, I think right after he bought the team, he actually flew and met with Robert Kraft. And he said, Kraft told him, look, you got to get a coach and a quarterback. And it all starts to fall in place. Well, obviously in New England, coach, quarterback. It looks like we want to feel and we want to say Baker seems to be the guy.
We finally have the quarterback.
We think he's also the guy because maybe Freddie was there with him as the quarterback whisperer, as some people want to refer to it anyway. Something else that I like, though, is the way I understand this, although we haven't had anything official from Berea, Fred, is Kitchens will report to Dorsey. There's a line here now with the ownership and the management. Is that what you're hearing?
Yeah. I think the first to report it was Charles Robinson from Yahoo, but said that that's the way it should be, you know, that, and that's where I really think I give credit to the organization that I think they got it right. You know, let John Dorsey lead the search and make the decision. I think he made this decision, and he really should be in direct line and reporting to him and in the process, because, you know, you get guys running to the owner and you have all kinds of different things if it's not set up in that organizational structure. So I like what they've done. We'll see how it plays out. But I just think, yeah, it comes down to, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
And Fred, I think that's they have something going there, and so you want to keep that continuity. But now there are decisions to be made as to, you know, will Freddie hire an offensive coordinator? How will that be structured? He needs a defensive coordinator. What are your thoughts? Any names that you've heard regarding those positions?
Well, I think defensive coordinator will be, you know, preeminent. I mean, like I said, Greg Williams did a good job, but the defense was ranked 30th in the NFL in yards given up. And you know, I think that if they could get a guy like Chuck Pagano or Jack Del Rio or somebody that's been a defensive coordinator, or even a head coach, much like Greg Williams, can run that side of the ball and let Freddie concentrate on the offense, I think he'll get some help. You know, I would think he would call the plays. That's what got him this job. I don't think he's an administrator type guy. I think you bring in somebody that can help in that area. But I think defensive coordinator, you know, is the big one. And then obviously you get special teams and so forth. But I think that'll fall into place. I think he's got, the connections and the help to do so.
All right, at some point, something official from Berea? I mean, we're all talking about this, but the Browns have yet to say anything, right?
Yeah, last night they didn't confirm anything,
right,
and even the press conference, so we'll see. I expect that today.
Good PR move on their part. They'll get two news cycles out of it, so that's good. All right, Fred Greatham, best team coverage of the Browns. Follow him on Twitter as well. Good stuff, though, and a good piece.
Check that out. You want to know more about Freddie Kitchens? Fred Greatham did a heck of a piece on them earlier this week, actually, before this actually happened. So check that out on the Orange and Brown Report.
Good stuff. Thanks, Fred.
Thanks, guys.
More at WTAM.com, keyword Browns, best team coverage of the Browns.